Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for October 4th, 2011. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Andrei Levchenko about a new study that quantifies signaling through biochemical networks. The cellular response to activation of a signaling pathway is influenced by the amount of signal that flows through the pathway. Whereas a low amount of a signal might lead to one output, such as cell proliferation, a high amount of that same signal might induce a different cellular response, such as differentiation. And like all networks, biochemical networks are subject to noise, and determining the difference between noise and real signal is important for tuning the biological response. Levchenko's group has developed a method for predicting and measuring how information flows through networks using the tumor necrosis factor signaling network as a model. Levchenko spoke to me from the Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. An important aspect of modeling information flow through biochemical networks or through any network is accounting for noise. In the context of a signaling pathway, what is noise and where does the noise come from?
Noise is something that is defined in various ways in biochemical systems. One useful way is to think of it as variable cell responses or variable biochemical responses given certain well-defined input. So what I mean by that is you can try to perform an experiment, for example, where you can do your best to control the input, the amount of growth factor, for example, that the cell is exposed to. And what you see is that, for the most part, cells can respond, but they don't respond in the same way. And these cells could have identical genetic composition, and as I said, the input could be essentially the same, but the outputs are very different. We see this diversity, we tend to say that it's a noisy output. It's not that every single cell provides you with a certain output. Cells seem to have minds of their own when they respond.
And the sources of noise? Where does the noise in a biological system come from?
You can have absolute clonal populations, and if you think about animals or humans and what happens in their bodies, you'll see that every single cell will pretty much have the same genetic content, and cells go to extreme efforts and they have a variety of different ways to ensure that this genetic composition is not going to change over time. Yet, they don't seem to go to the same degree of effort to ensure that the responses to environmental conditions would be equally well conserved. So if the cells are exposed to potentially very important inputs, this is where you have very large degree of uncertainty in terms of how the cells may respond to such very important inputs. The reasons for that are twofold. We can sort of distinguish more physical reasons and perhaps more biochemical reasons. Physical reasons relate to the fact that if you have biochemical signals diffusing, for example, in the body, the diffusion process is not a certain event. It's not something that you would have as an electric impulse going through the wire. There you would probably be relatively certain that it either goes through the wire or not. When you have a diffusion of growth factor, for example, that's a very uncertain process subject to a lot of fluctuations. And this is a physical reality that you cannot really circumvent. There are also differences between cells themselves in a sense of how many molecules, for example, of a certain type they may have. So the different numbers of molecules involved in signaling, for example, can generate this diversity of cell responses. And you can see that both of the sources are something that is physically there and it's very hard to circumvent.
For an individual cell, differentiating between noise and real signal can be a problem. And this is more of a problem at the level of the individual cell than it is for a population of cells. So how do groups of cells overcome the noise problem?
That's an excellent question. And in fact, one of the most interesting aspects of the study is in the sort of in the way we pose the question, and sort of related to the way you're posing the question, but maybe I can rephrase this a little bit. We are not only interested in how the cells recognize useful signals from sort of this environmental kind of noise that is always there, like a static noise that maybe present in the telephone conversation. We are asking a more basic question. We're asking how many different levels of the signal cells can recognize in principle. Frequently, the outcome of signaling is decision-making. It could be change in the way genes are expressed. It could be cells committing suicide or surviving. It could be cells moving versus staying put in the same place. So the number of decisions that the cells can make given this signaling input is something that we don't really know much about. We tend to think about signaling as something that potentially could be used by a cell to see infinitely many levels of the input. And if you have thousands or millions of cells, and frequently in the experiments, that's how signaling analysis is performed. You have thousands or millions of cells all mixed together, and the signal is extracted from all of them collectively. One could get an impression that you have this very nice, very smooth input-output relationships, allowing you to distinguish infinitely many different input levels and therefore make infinitely many different decisions. But the signaling noise that we discussed introduces much harsher reality to this. And so the question becomes, how many decisions can, in fact, a cell make? And hopefully it can recognize different levels of the input, because otherwise the whole signaling event, this process becomes meaningless. You cannot really convey the signals very well.
Levchenko's group used models of communication through telephone lines and other human-scale communication networks to guide their approach to modeling how information flows through biochemical networks. They were specifically interested in how much information can flow through a network and where in that network information loss is likely to occur. Their initial studies indicated that the amount of information that can pass through a single signaling pathway is rather low if that pathway is able to distinguish between different amounts of input.
So this result was very surprising, but then we, of course, started thinking that perhaps we're asking the question in a slightly limited fashion. We know, in fact, that the signaling takes place in rather complicated ways within a cell. So we identify pathways, but in reality, we should be thinking about networks. We can have multiple different ways the signal can travel from the cell surface to the decision centers, for example, to the nucleus where the genes are, or to the motility apparatus in the cell. So we tried to see whether, in a specific example of signaling network, this TNF, tumor necrosis factor activated network, we would gain the information processing capability by looking at multiple pathways that may be generated by this one input. And one of the advantages of having this type of network where you have more than one pathway leading away from the input and then converging on the decision-making is that each of these pathways can be subject to its own source of noise or its own specific variability. So when you bring them together, you can potentially extract useful information in a better way, just because you will be able potentially to average out some of this independent noise that may be affecting each of the pathways.
They experimentally determined the amount of signaling that passes through the TNF-alpha network in cells, but they also built a model that's generally applicable to other types of branched networks. These are networks in which a single source of input may lead to different outcomes in a single cell or different cellular responses within a population of cells.
Even though we think about the sort of fanning out of these different pathways, it's very important to think about what happens as the signal enters into such a network. The signal enters in a specific way, usually through the receptor for a specific growth factor or a specific other signaling molecule. And this would be something where this reaction of the receptor with the input and something that may happen after that, these processes could be very noisy. And if they are very noisy, then you could lose a lot of information at this very initial step of the pathway. And having a network of pathways downstream after what happens at this initial step is then not going to be very useful because you already lost a lot of information at this very initial step. So you would not gain any particular advantage of having this structure. You could also have a situation where such bottleneck would be absent. Maybe you would not have such a dramatic information loss at the initial step. And in this case, you can potentially benefit quite a bit from this fanned out type of network of different pathways. So the model made very specific predictions that we contrasted with the experiment as to whether we'll have such a bottleneck in this particular network or not. And the prediction was that indeed there's a very substantial information bottleneck at the very origin of this network, at the point of entry of the signal into the cell. So that was something that made this sort of network processing versus a single pathway processing not necessarily very advantageous, just because so much information was lost at the very beginning of this signaling event. However, we figured that perhaps there is a way for the cell to try to sort of overcome this bottleneck. And one way to do it in principle is to rely on what is known as negative feedback. So essentially what happens is that the signal may not travel just in one direction only. Sometimes the signal can come back to its very origin in a network, and that potentially could reduce noise. However, what it also can do, and this is where the model was also critical for us to have, what it also can do is it can suppress the responses themselves and therefore make it more difficult for the cell to see the difference between high degree of input and low degree of input. So even though you reduce noise, you also can reduce this ability by the cell to see the differences between low and high signals.
Did the predictions about the information bottleneck bear out in experiments?
We have made two different predictions here to sort of predict what might happen if there is a bottleneck and what would be the output without such a bottleneck. Indeed, in this network, which we examined experimentally, there is this very substantial loss of information at the very origin of the signaling event, at the point of the sensing of the signal by the cell. So we could show that there is indeed a very substantial loss of information in the experimental system that we looked at.
How's understanding where loss of information occurs in a network helpful?
That's a great question. It's very helpful because we usually deal with rather complex networks of signaling pathways. So these are complex networks of biochemical reactions that can activate each other. And when you look at these networks, you try to measure what happens at different points, you may see that there is a noisy output, right? We've discussed noise. So when you try to understand it, it's very hard for you to know where this noise is coming from. So as I said, there could be many different origins, which makes it very difficult to really pin it down. What we've done is we actually have shown that most of the limitation here, most of the loss of the ability to recognize what happens outside, happens very early in the network. Essentially, we can map it rather precisely to a particular portion of the network and say that a huge fraction of noisiness is really confined to that. So knowing that, we can now revisit the question of how we should understand the origins of noise in this particular network. And that makes, you know, any thinking about how one copes with this much more defined. And it also tells us that various tricks that cells may have up their sleeves may not be very effective if you have such a pronounced bottleneck for information transfer so early in a network. It's very hard to circumvent it because it really limits at the very origin of signaling events. So for a single cell to make high fidelity decisions becomes very problematic. However, there is a way to circumvent that where you rely on multiple cells perceiving a signal and engaging in some response. And the reason for that is that even though the bottleneck is present, it's present within each individual cell, but if you have multiple cells trying to do something, you no longer have that bottleneck before the signal hits every single individual cell. So cells working together can rather successfully increase the amount of information that you can have about the input.
Thank you, Dr. Levchenko.
You're welcome.
That was Andrei Levchenko, senior author of a research report released September 15th on Science Express. That paper is by Chung and colleagues, and it's titled Information Transduction Capacity of Noisy Biochemical Signaling Networks. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.